Morning, everybody. How are we today? Doing good. Like you said, I'm Jeff Babs. I've been here quite a few times for camp, usually, and I spoke last time I was here as well, and must not have done too bad because I got asked back, or you're desperate, one of the two, so probably the second. But, so like you said, my name's Jeff. I'm from Camp Maranatha. Me and my wife are the directors down there, and that's my lovely family there. If you hear any hollering, screaming, cars rolling, it's them. Just ignore it. Before I get into the sermon, I'm going to give you a quick update about camp from this last summer, because we had a very big summer, which was awesome. It was our biggest summer by about 35 kids. I think we ended up with 264. So that's awesome, yes. Yeah, my goal has been 250 since I started 8 years ago. So now my goal is 275. So we'll just keep growing. But a bunch of new kids, a lot of returning kids, and we also had 8 baptisms that we got to do at the camp this year, which is awesome. So that is huge for us. Today, probably should be a Father's Day sermon, but I picked today to do it. So we are going to talk about the importance of being a good father or parent. So ladies, you don't get a tune out either, sorry. What it means to be a good parent and how that's going to help all of us interact with our kids and also just the kids that you see around you. First, I'm going to start talking about giving some background of what the consequences are of growing up in a fatherless home and what that looks like. And when I say fatherless, that doesn't just mean dad's not in the picture. It could mean that your dad is abusive, your dad is home, but he's not really home. He's either on his phone, he's at golf, he's doing work. You have a dad, but he's just not really around. And one of the big ones is cell phones these days. I know I have a bad habit of it, but like I talked about last time I was here, kids are plugged into technology for the most part 8 to 10 hours a day. So when you come home and you sit there on your phone the whole time and they're trying to interact with you, that's just more time that they're not interacting with people because you're also plugged in. And there's a lot of research that also leads to language development issues for kids like 0 to 6 years old if you're on your phone while they're trying to talk with you, because there's just less words spoken to them. But some bigger ones. 70% of all prisoners in the U.S. come from fatherless homes. That's a big portion. 60% of rapists come from fatherless homes. 72% of adolescent murderers come from fatherless homes. 71% of high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. And I'm really big with numbers, love numbers. Along with that 70% of high school dropouts, high school dropout earns about $300,000 less over their lifetime than someone that graduated high school. So not just thinking of prison, things like that, thinking of taxes paid in a lifetime, it's estimated that the U.S. loses out on about $10 billion a year of taxpayer dollars because those kids aren't graduating high school. 63% of teen suicide comes from fatherless homes. And the last one I have is the poverty rate for kids with single mothers is 47% and 65% if that child is African American. So I'm not saying that because I think all of you guys are bad dads and this is the reality. No, this is what happens when we don't step up and do our job as dads and parents. So that's just the background. So now we're going to talk about what it means to be a biblical leader in your household and what God is calling us to do as a father. And we're going to do that through looking at the Bible, because that's the best place to look for anything God wants to tell us. So first we're going to jump over to Deuteronomy 6:6-7. I've got a bunch of these, so I'm going to cheat and get there way quicker than all of you. But if you want to flip there, you're more than welcome to. So Deuteronomy 6:6-7 reads, "These words that I am giving you today are to be in your heart. Repeat them to your children. Talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up." Yours might say something a little different. That's okay. A lot of people have different versions. But what it's telling us is that we need to teach our children the Bible. We need to be in the Word as dads and parents, and we need to be teaching that to our kids. It's also telling us to do it all the time. So he uses double opposites in this verse. That's always Our pastor, Seth, from our church, always tells us, if you say something repeated or opposite of each other, you really need to take mention of it. So he's saying, when you sit, and when you walk, and when you lie down, and when you get up. So he repeats opposites twice. So that means he is wanting you to do it all the time, always. Anytime you're awake, anytime you're sitting down, anytime you're with your kids, anytime. Just double that. Said, so pay attention. So you need to be doing that with your kids all the time. And that comes down to spending time with them. Like I said, fatherless homes, part of that is absent fathers that are in the house. When you're working, you get home, you play golf, you get on your phone. These kids need time invested in them. All right, that is one of the biggest things we can do as dads, is to invest our time intentionally with them. Coming home and getting on your phone, I know I'm guilty of it. My middle child, Ted, likes to say my name about 45 times a minute. But when I'm on my phone, because I know he's just going to show me the same book he showed me 14 times, I just don't register it. And sometimes Ralph or Ted or Mom, it's like, get off your phone. He's talking to you. And I'm terrible at it. And I'm trying to be better. But he needs me to be investing in him. He goes to daycare. I don't get him 8 hours a day. When I'm with him, I need to be investing that time with him. And at the same time, you're investing all that time, you should be teaching them about the Bible and about Jesus. And it's just very important. And we'll talk more about that a little bit more. Another one that backs this up is Proverbs 22:6. Again, you can flip there, but I'm already there, so up to you. But it reads, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. So that verse is telling us that as parents, we are our children's spiritual mentors. We are their primary spiritual mentor. Now, if you're taking them to church, they're going to have other mentors at church, but they're not spending 100 hours a week at church. They're spending an hour to an hour and a half at church every week. So that's where we have to step up as dads and as moms and as grandparents to invest in those kids spiritually. Another part of spending time with them, and this is probably a hot topic for a lot of people, we're going to talk about what discipline should look like. Bless you. You all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. It happens. Happens to me all the time. So discipline. When I was growing up, discipline looked very different in our household than what it does in my household currently. I grew up in a family that, I mean, we got spanked, we got put in time, all that stuff. And I'm not saying any of those things are bad, but what the Bible is telling us is where our heart is when we come out with that discipline. I've got a couple verses with this. First, we're going to start in Ephesians 6:4. Sorry, I got to find it. So, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So I know that a lot of us, when we discipline our children, it's because they've annoyed us and they've frustrated us, and we come back with annoyance and frustration and anger, and that usually just makes it worse, at least when me and my oldest Ralph get into it, which is pretty often. Yeah, that one right there. We both are very strong-willed, so when I respond with anger, he just gets more angry, and then I get more angry, and then it's... Eventually, Shelby's like, you both need to go to opposite rooms, and that usually fixes it. But so we need to learn where we're coming from. But I'm not saying discipline's not important. It still needs to be there. So in Hebrews 12:3-11, it's a little bit longer. I'll read it real quick. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet registered to the point of shedding your blood, and have you forgotten the extortion that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons, for what son is there with whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and lives? For they disciplined us for a short time as it seems best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. So right there, God is telling us we definitely need to discipline our children because it's going to instill in them respect for you, for other adults. But we need to come about it in a way of patience and understanding rather than anger and frustration, because that's just going to sow more anger and frustration, and it's just going to keep being a repeating process over and over again. Talking about trying to instill in them patience and understanding and kindness and love, the next one, sorry, I'm a fast talker sometimes, the next one is going to be showing your kids love and how you can show them love. And the best one is to love God. Hands down, best one you can do. Next one is to love your spouse, love your wife. And that's in Ephesians 5:25. I'll read it real quick. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So that's a short one, pretty concise. But by showing appropriate love to your wife, your kids are going to feel more safe, more secure. They're going to be more willing to come to you when they have need of advice or need of something, because they know you're going to love them and understand them and take care of them rather than be angry and frustrated. I was listening to a podcast a couple weeks ago about how to be a good husband and a good father, and they were talking about how you should love your wife, especially in front of your children. And it was I can't remember his name, but it was a pretty popular pastor, and he said that you should love your wife enough that it makes your kids slightly uncomfortable. So that's your goal, husbands, to love your wives till your kids are slightly uncomfortable. I understand. You'll be all right. You'll be all right. Sorry, Aubrey. But on the reverse side of that, I understand that some people are separated, divorced, there's things that have happened, you are no longer together with that spouse. You can still show love to those kids' mother. That comes as respect. You respect their time. You respect their opinions about how to raise your kids codependent or together while being separate. Also, a big one that I know a lot of people, and I have this issue sometimes, not talking negatively about them, especially in front of your kids. They're going to hear that. They're going to think it. It's just going to build resentment either towards that spouse or towards you. So you need to be showing love to them even if you're not together in the house. So the last one I have, it's not the last thing I'm talking about, the last point I have out of here, it's arguably the most important to be considered a good father or a parent, is to not only immerse yourself in the Bible, to be in it every day and to meditate on it, is to get your kids in the Bible every day. We're going to flip to Joshua 1:8. And it reads, "This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will make... then you will have good success." So he is wanting us to read the Bible day and night so we can prosper and grow in it. That's as an individual. And then I have another verse that I would bet half of the people in here have this verse, at least partial of it, hanging in their house. Almost every Midwestern mom I've known has it hanging or on a doormat or on a mug. Joshua 24:15. I'm going to read the whole thing. Usually they just have the little bit at the end, but "And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." If you have not seen that in a house, you just haven't been looking, because it's in all of them. It's on my mom's front porch, or at least it was for a while. But that is a very profound thing. If you can get your whole house to serve the Lord wholeheartedly all the time, that's not just going to affect your family. It's going to affect your grandkids. It's going to affect their kids. And it's just going to start affecting your kids' friends, and it's just going to be offshoots galore for generations that will affect everyone. So that's, I put it last because it's the most important, I believe, to get your whole family to worship the Lord wholeheartedly. So those things being said from the Bible, I'm going to end my time up here with a little bit of a challenge for everyone here. If you don't know, I coach, that's Clarabelle, told you. I coach sports. I have since I was 18 years old. I have been coaching 12 years now, going on my 13th. For the last six or so, I've been coaching girls, and then this last 2 years, I've switched to boys basketball. It was a big adjustment, but I have noticed how important it is in the last 2 years for young, again, I've been coaching boys for two, so young men to have male role models in their lives. I picked up the baseball team this last year at Ramsey because they didn't have anyone to do it. And Shelby said, you better not let those kids not have a coach. And I've really enjoyed it. I'm glad she told me to do it. But I've got 10 kids on my team this year. And I might get upset. I might get a little emotional. Four of them don't have dads out of 10. Two of them passed away in the last year. Their dads did. And one of them, their dad and mom both are in and out of prison. They're living with their great-grandma. And another one has lived with his grandparents his whole life because his mom and dad are blind, legally blind. So, and I have seen the impact that just showing up for these kids every day has made on them. I had one boy come out this year to play baseball for the first time since sixth grade just because he heard I was coaching baseball, because I coached him in basketball last year. Not saying I'm the best coach in the world or the best person in the world, but he just had an adult that invested in him individually, and he wanted to play another sport he hasn't played ever just so he could spend more time. So this whole thing wasn't just to have you affect your kids. It was to affect any kids that you're in contact with. And now some of us are like, oh, I'm not in contact with kids. Well, if you're 70 and you're talking with 50-year-old people, those are kids to you. So just letting you know, 54, you know, that's about the age range. But so my challenge is for you guys and for myself, and I've been trying to be more intentional with it, is to find people that need that role model in their life. They're there. If you just open your eyes and open your heart, you will see that there are people that need just a little extra guidance throughout the week, a little extra guidance in their lives at this moment. So that's my challenge is for you over the next few weeks is to find that person. And it doesn't have to be a big investment into their time. Like, mine seems like a lot because I'm there 2 hours a day, but I'd be there 2 hours a day coaching baseball either way. But in that 2 hours, I always make sure to connect individually with each of those kids so that they know that I'm there for them. And it's usually not about whatever sport. I'm asking them how life's going, how work's going, how school going, just so they know that I care about them outside of that scope of what we're there for. So that's my challenge for you guys is to find that person and to start investing in them. So if you'll pray with me, I'll wrap it up. Hey, God, thank you for this beautiful week. I know it was a little warm, but we all got through it. I just want to pray for all these people here that they got something out of this message and that they can go out this week and affect their community in a positive way. I just pray for all the kids going back to school, that they don't get lost in the busyness of it and they can still find time for you. And I just pray for everyone to have a safe week. And I just pray these things in your name. Amen.